So, yeah, regarding why Jiva Goswami's commentary, because Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur's commentary is, you know, language is very, very difficult to follow. And it is mostly like just to, probably in those days, if you had a very good command over language, you know, the people respect you a lot, probably. They take you very seriously. So that's probably one reason why Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur wrote it in such a difficult language, actually, just to help people understand that this is no ordinary book, this is not a comic book that I'm writing, you know, this is some serious subject matter. So, I found Jiva Goswami's commentary much more easy to follow with respect to the language, at least. So, once you crack the language of Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, then you can understand the philosophy. So that is a double work in one sense. So that way, Jiva Goswami is a little bit more language-wise. At least Bhanuswami Maharaj has translated it, straightforward language. And also because we have been discussing the Sandarbhas, it becomes, you know, we are sort of used to his way of style of translating and explanation. So it becomes a little more easier. And of course, if we had already completed the Krishna Sandarbha, then a lot of the discussion that comes here in Brahma Samhita is almost like complete repetition. So, but nevertheless, we have not done. So maybe after we complete Brahma Samhita, some of the discussions of Krishna Krishna Sandarbha will become very, you know, it will be repetitive, we can easily understand.
So one more reason I heard about Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur is he said some of the words I don't find any other alternative, that's why I had to use the same word to explain the point.
Oh, that like some he word. Did. Yeah, he, that is why he wanted to compile a book called Vaishnava Manjusha. So because for two purposes, one is he. There are no proper English equivalent for many of the Vaishnava terminologies. So he wanted to compile a whole different Vaishnava encyclopedia, which will have two things. One is it will have details about the Vaishnavas, details about the dhams, and details about Vaishnava terms. A terminology will be given. And then a detailed explanation of what it means. So that when that terminology is used, people can get a proper understanding. Otherwise, you know, like Prabhupada said, there is no exact English equivalent of the word rasa. And because I have seen our spiritual master use the word mellow to indicate rasa, I will also use the same explanation in that. So, but he wanted to compile, it was a multi-volume project. That Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur had envisioned. In those days, I think he had actually envisioned in the early 1900s, probably, he had envisioned a budget of 5 lakhs for this project.
Oh. So at that time, the dictaphones and all things are not there.
Not there. So 5 lakhs means actually just to give an idea of what was the value of a rupee during those times. Bhakti Pragyan Keshav Maharaj, before he joined the ashram, he was a grihastha, but he wanted to join. He was not a grihastha, but he was probably not married, but he was working. And one of the Gaudiya Mutts, he was the main contributor. He was the main donor. So once he decided to join the ashram, the whole ashram went to report to Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur. They said that if he joins the ashram, how are we going to get the donation for the mutt? Because the mutt runs almost completely because of his donation. So how much was he donating during those days? 5 rupees per month. So that was his donation, and most of the mutt expenses were taken care using the that 5 rupees donation. So that those are the years we are talking about, and in those days, actually, he had envisioned 5 lakhs to compile this multi-volume encyclopedic project of compiling this Vaishnava Manjushar. And during those days, when he presented this idea to one of the kings, maybe he was the king of Manipur or something like that. So he said, okay, I will fund the project. But then he asked, what is your budget? He thought he may say some maybe 500 rupees or something like that. He said 5 lakhs. And the king was shocked, because even for the king, it 5 lakhs was like too much during those days. So he sort of never fulfilled it. I think he funded maybe 1 volume or 2 volumes he funded. After that, he stopped the funding. And I think Gaudiya Math managed to publish maybe 2 or 3 volumes, and after that the whole project was scrapped because it was too much hard work. Maybe in future Iswan can take up that project, because it was a very dear desire of Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur. But that is one reason why even in Sri Vaishnava scholarly presentations, most of Sri Vaishnava books, unfortunately, are not translated into readable English, actually. Because there are two extremes. One extreme is all Sri Vaishnava books have been translated into English by Ramakrishna Mathur. So they have only translated, unfortunately. So with all their philosophical deviation and all that, because the Sri Vaishnavites never bothered to translate it in English, and whatever English translation is available is of serious philosophical works in absolutely unintelligible English, very very scholarly English. Only scholars can, you know. I tried reading a few books. I mean, common man cannot even imagine reading and understanding even the foreword and the introduction to that. So that kind of English, and they don't bother to translate any of the Sanskrit words, because there are no equivalent English words. But the point is that common man cannot understand the Sanskrit word also. So it becomes practically impossible to read and understand any of those books. So,
and very unfortunate, bro. All Divyadesham, there is not even one book in proper in English which is explaining all the past tense of Divyadesham. Not even for Srirangam, Srirangam Kanji. So I tried it. I translated. I kept in English, but somebody maybe in future they will edit and they can do it. I made it little English which you can understand.
So this is in one sense maybe. Maybe that is one reason, lack of literature in readable language, because Tamil is most people, you know, like Tamil is the only language, you know. What about other languages where people might want to read, or even English? English is more universal now. So, yeah, I think some effort has to be done. That way, Prabhupada has done is...
1930, one IAS officer, he made the past tense of all Divyadeshams. That is only available. Now it is available in TTD. Means it is on their website. Apart from that, there is no book English. In English, no book on Divyadeshams. That is the only book available.
So that way, we can try to follow this Digdarshini commentary and try to understand. Of course, Brahma Samhita is only the 5th chapter is available of this whole work. This was found out by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself during his South India Yatra in Adhikeshav temple. When he found out and read it, he was so happy that he personally he made a copy of that and he carried it with him. I think Krishna Karanamrita and Brahma Samhita, he got a copy from Adi Keshav temple. I mean, it's very interesting because they would go to temples and actually apart from taking darshan of the deities and offering prayers to the deities, they would also go to their temple library, which means a proper library or collection of granthas were maintained. Probably it is still there, but I don't think anyone bothers because in one sense, Sanskrit as a language is outdated, or at least not people, common people can't read and understand. But interesting that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu found it out. And also somewhere, was it Rameshwar, where he heard from, was it Varaha Puran, where the description of Maya Sita was being described. They were studying and discussing it, and he heard it. He took that and he made a copy and brought it to that Brahmana.
He brought the original copy, gave them the copy.
He brought the original copy. So these are things which means temples in those days were definitely not just which housed the deities and allowed the people to come and take darshan of the deities, but definitely of the Siddhanta itself. So the books were very integral parts of the temples. So, yeah.
One point, bro, like authenticity of Brahma Samhita, they have any other... because when this is the argument, whenever we put our, we place our philosophical discussions, they based on Brahma Samhita, because many of the, especially Anantakoti Brahmanda, especially not Anantakoti Brahmandas, Anantakoti Vaikuntas, and the proof we give is from Brahma Samhita, and there are many Lakshmi Sahasra, Sata Sambrama, or that Karanakshay, Kshiradakshay, Vishnus, their different positions. We give reference from Brahma Samhita, and many of the points which we have is we quote from Brahma Samhita. When it comes to Sri Vaishnavas and all, they don't accept Brahma Samhita. So how we can?
I mean Brahma Samhita as such prove is. I mean, I don't know the Sri Vaishnavites and others. They don't know what Brahma Samhita is. Only Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has accepted Brahma Samhita. So when we are having a discussion with other Vaishnava Sampradayas, we cannot quote Brahma Samhita because the authenticity of Brahma Samhita is not accepted by them. So, but that is still fine because they might quote the Alvar's writings. So, I mean, in one sense... that is not like a part of Vedic canon, even though what they have written is based on the Vedic conclusions only. But still, it is not exactly, Vedic. So, I think every Sampradaya has such writings. So, now, just like we cannot quote Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu to establish anything, because they will not accept Rupa Goswami. So similarly, so therefore they will generally, when it comes to inter-sampradayic discussions, mostly it is based on the Shrutis, from the Upanishads, Bhagavad Gita, or Puranas. So these are like if it is between inter-sampradaya, inter-Vaishnava Sampradaya discussions, then they include Puranas also. But if it is between Mayavadis, then they quote only purely from Upanishads. There is no other thing. So, like that. So,
like this is part of Samhita, so it should be part of Vedas.
Yeah, but a lot of it is not available and they don't know. Like some of the Upanishads and all, you quote like Chaitanya Upanishad and all, it's not considered as a principal Upanishad by any other sampradaya.
Yeah.
Even Gopal Thapani for that matter is quoted exclusively by Gaudiya Vaishnava sampradayas only. They might quote other sampradaya, other Upanishads, like they exclusively they quote from Mahanarayana Upanishad and other such things to establish the superiority of Lord Narayana. But Gopal Thapani, if you take, it's very clear, very clearly establishes the supremacy of Krishna. Even in Brahma Samhita commentaries, he will quote exclusively from Gopal Thapani Upanishad. But you will not see any other sampradayika acharyas quoting from Gopal Thapani at all. So that is in one sense like only exclusive Gaudiya Vaishnava. Whenever they want to establish Krishna as a supreme, they will quote that. So while the other sampradayas may accept Gopal Thapani and they may say, oh, it's not a very important Upanishad. Where is it even in Mahanarayana Upanishad? Like that they will argue. So each sampradaya have chosen their own primary pramana. This is our primary pramana. And it is perfectly fine. Because Bhaktisila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that there are two the supreme lordshipping are inclined to worshipping the lordships in the mood of Aishwarya. Their highest form of worship is Lakshmi Narayana. And for those who are inclined to worship in the mood of Madhurya, not in the sense of Madhurya Ras, but in the sense of sweetness as opposed to Aishwarya, for them the highest form of worship is Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan. So he says that it is according to the mood of worship, and definitely those who are inclined to that Aishwarya form of worship, they will be inclined to Upanishads like Mahanarayana Upanishad, and they will accept them as primary Pramanas and or Vishnu Purana, more than even Bhagavad Purana. When it comes to devotees who are inclined to worship the lordships in the mood of Madhurya, they will accept Gopal Thapani and Srimad Bhagavatam, like that. So it is but natural. There is nothing wrong. If you say Chaitanya Upanishad, they will say, what is Chaitanya Upanishad? They will say, about the authenticity of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu being the avatari. You quote from them, they will not accept. Because if they accept it, then they will have to worship that form, and this will sort of not be very conducive for their own mode of worship. Because the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are definitely Raganuga, whereas their inclination is Vaidhi. So therefore, it becomes very difficult. That is why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Channavatar. If you say Channa, covered avatar, he is covered from whom?
Covered from other sampradayas.
Because if you say he is covered from everyone, then covered from atheists, then literally every avatar is a Channa avatar only, because no atheist accept any avatars. Right? So definitely Channa will not refer to covered from atheists, because that would mean all avataras are channa, because as Krishna says, yogamaya samavrita, naham prakash sarvasya yogamaya samavrita. So any common man who does not accept the path of the Vedic path, for him covered, all avataras are covered. But channa avatara means he should be covered not just from the atheists, he should be covered from others who do accept other incarnations also. Right? So that is the meaning of the word Channaha Kalau, as Prahlad Maharaj mentions in his teachings. Right? So it is but natural that they will not accept such kind of explanations. Even in Vishnu Sahasranama, we quote Suvarna Varno Hemango Varangas Chandanangadi. If you see, that explanation is given by only our acharyas, as that indicating Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. If you see the Sri Vaishnava Sampradayas and other Sampradayas where Vishnu Sahasranama is accepted, there are extensive commentaries. None of those commentaries indicate that verse to mention that verse to indicate Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So similarly, you see, even Bhagavatam, if you take Yate Cham Sakala Pumsa Krishnastha Bhagavan Swayam, they will have a different explanation for that, which is very much acceptable according to Sanskrit grammar. So because the absolute truth is multifaceted, the Shastras compare the absolute truth to a Vaidurya stone. So a Vaidurya stone, you see from one direction it looks blue in color, from another direction it looks red in color, from another direction it looks green in color, yellow in color, like that. So if someone says, oh, the Vaidurya is blue, he's not wrong. He is given access to one facet of that Vaidurya jar. Someone else says, oh, it is red in color, he's also not wrong. He is given access to another facet. So similarly, different sampradayas, according to whatever mood they are inclined to worship, they will gain access to particular pramanas as chief pramanas. And also, if there is a common pramana, an explanation of a verse, a different facet of that explanation will be revealed to them, which will nourish their own mood of worship. So therefore, when they read verses like Ete Jam Sakala Pumsa Krishnastha Bhagavan Swayam, a different facet of that understanding will be revealed to them. Just like the first verse of Bhagavatam, Srila Vishnachakra Thakur himself gives six different explanations of the first verse. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave 81 different explanations of the Atma Rama verse, which are different from each other. So similarly, and each one of them is correct, and each one of them nourishes our own understanding, our Gaudiya Vaishnava understanding of our philosophy. So similarly, there could be other understandings which nourish their understanding, which nourish their mode of worship. Their Aishwarya mode of worship can be nourished by those things. So we don't get into these kind of arguments with other sampradayas. For example, if you see, even in Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, they have literatures which describe Srila Ramanujacharya to be the incarnation of Ananta Sesh, and another Acharya called Manavala Mamunigal or Varavara Muni to be the incarnation of Krishna. But the kind of Manavala Mamunigal is Krishna. Ramanujacharya is Adishesha, and Manavala, my mother is correcting me, but I still very much feel that I've heard that Manavala Mamunigal is an incarnation of Krishna or Adishesha, whatever it may be. But if you see the kind of proofs that they quote, they establish this point, other sampradayas may not accept it or read that explanation as being indicative of that. They may say, oh, there are other explanations for this, which is perfectly fine, right? So the point is that revelation, that revelation of particular these pramanas also, and particular reading of that particular pramanas, it varies. Probably, I think we will stop our videos, because very quickly my internet is getting consumed, and also today evening Manasiksha discussion is also there. So I think we will. If it is okay with you, we will continue with that. Yeah. So therefore, it is in one sense, it is but natural. We don't have to really bother about other sampradayas validating. In fact, other sampradayas, we should expect other sampradayas to not completely validate our whole philosophy. It will never happen. And if that happens, then they will also have to accept our mode of worship. In fact, as we discussed before, even between Madhvaites and Sri Vaishnavites, there are a lot of differences. They don't accept each other. The Madhvaites, if you see, the Kattar Madhvaites, they will not go to Sri Vaishnavite temples and accept the prasadam there. They will not go to Sri Vaishnavite's home and accept prasadam there, because they consider the Sri Vaishnavites to be borderline Mayavadis. But they don't have any problem. Sri Vaishnavites don't stop their worship because the Madhvaites don't accept. Or the Madhvaites don't stop their worship because the Sri Vaishnavites don't accept. Different sampradayas, everything should be one sampradaya. So, therefore, our understanding is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the most all-embracing personality. He accepted all the sampradayas as bona fide. While establishing his own Achinta Bheda Bhedatva. Mm. So, of course, even the earlier Sri Vaishnava Acharyas may have also been like that. We do not know. But certainly the current, because this was Nityananda Prabhu personally shared this with me when he was studying under some Madhva scholars, Sanskrit, he saw that, even though they were staying in Triplicane. So Triplicane in Chennai is like a Sri Vaishnava hub. In okay. Chennai, maximum number of people who stay in Triplicane are either Sri Vaishnavites or Muslims.
That's a Muslims.
So, both coexist there. And one of the Divyadeshams, very popular Divyadeshams, Parthasarathi temple is there in Triplicane. Mm. So these Madhvaites, they have one of their mutts there where Nityananda Prabhu used to go and learn. So they never used to go and take prasadam even from Parthasarathi temple, or they never used to go and take prasadam from any Sri Vaishnavite's home.
Oh.
So therefore, in one sense, philosophically, if you see, there have been significant, what to speak of that Prabhu, even within Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, the northern sect and the southern sect have a significant difference in their philosophical understanding.
Yeah.
They are at very strong loggerheads. So, yeah. But it's not that the southern sect have given up their practice because the northern sect have not accepted their philosophical conclusions, or the southern sect have stopped practicing because the northern sect don't accept their philosophical conclusions. So therefore, in one sense, we have faith and trust in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Srila Rupa Goswami and Six Goswamis and their followers. They have perfectly presented the philosophy. Even though the Sri Vaishnavas did coexist during those times, they didn't have a problem. They had very reasonable explanation of all the Vedic texts, the Upanishads and the Puranas, in a way that is very consistent with the, they could very clearly see the consistency in the explanations that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught them and revealed to them. So, we don't necessarily have to have any problem. And certainly, if we are explaining things to other sampradayas, we don't necessarily have to quote Brahma Samhita, because as a Pramana, I don't think any other sampradayas they accept Brahma Samhita as a Pramana.
Yeah. Yes.
So we will start with the first verse of Brahma Samhita. We'll chant together and then see the explanation. Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachidananda Vigraha Anadiradir Govindaha Sarvakarana Karanam. So, he says, Krishna, he is Paramaha. Paramaha means the supreme controller. And Ishwaraha. Ishwaraha means he is the enjoyer of innumerable consorts. How these explanations come, we will go through the explanations. Actually, even though one fourth, you can say like almost, yeah, one fourth of this whole book is the explanation of the first verse of Brahma Samhita. So, yeah, there are about 400, almost close to 500, 450 slides. And 100 slides are explanation of this first verse.
So
in this, the whole Gaudiya Vaishnava conclusions and philosophies, everything is there in this explanation of this first verse. So, yeah, Ishwara is explained as the enjoyer of innumerable consorts, and Sat Chit Ananda Vigraha. So Sat Vigraha means he possesses a form of eternality. It's an eternal form. Chit Vigraha means that is a form of knowledge, and Ananda Vigraha means it is a form of bliss. So basically, Vigraha means the absolute truth has a form, right? And Anadi means he has no origin, but he is Adi. He is the source of all other forms of God. So Adi is explained as he is the source of all other forms of God also, right? Sarva Karana Karanam. Sarva Karana Karanam means he is the cause of all causes. And who is that person whom we are talking about? He says Govinda, the boy who cares for the cows. So here Govinda indicates that this Krishna indicated is actually Vraja Krishna. Because in Dwaraka, Krishna is not taking, he is not a cowherd boy. Only Vrindavan, he is a cowherd boy. Yeah, yeah. One who herds the cows. So, this is the explanation of the first verse, basic explanation. Ishwara Paramah Krishna Sachidananda Vigraha Anadiradir Govindaha Sarvakarana Karana. So now, he starts with Mangalacharan while explaining this verse. He says that Rupa Goswami, whose younger brother was Sri Vallabha and whose elder brother is Sanatan Goswami, is my good fortune. So he is offering obeisances to Rupa Goswami because Jiva Goswami accepts Rupa Goswami as his guru. Indeed, he is the good fortune for all living entities, honored in my heart. It is by Krishna's mercy that I desire to explain the Brahma Samhita. This work, passed down by the sages, even though difficult to understand, becomes filled with meaning on careful consideration. So he does say that this was passed down by the sages, and even though difficult to understand, becomes filled with meaning on careful consideration. So the careful consideration, Jiva Goswami is going to do it for us. He is going to carefully consider the meaning of this verse, of this book, and he is going to explain it to us. Right. In considering the proper meaning of this work, I will take shelter of the greatest amongst the sages, Vedavyas. So he's telling that I am going to explain it based on the understanding of Vedavyas. Even though the Brahma Samhita has 100 chapters, this fifth chapter is complete in itself since it expresses compactly the essential meaning of all the scriptures. Okay, so basically he says fifth chapter is complete in itself. Because it gives the essential
meaning of all
conclusions of all scriptures. So, what persons of pure intelligence, realize in the Srimad Bhagavatam and other works is presented in this work. So, why Brahma Samhita is important? Because it is a book which is in line with the conclusions of Srimad Bhagavatam.
Perfect.
Okay. Otherwise, if you see, Srila Rupa Goswami says, Bahugrantha Kalabhyasa Vyakya Vada Vivarjanam. That one of the 64 limbs, one of the 20 important limbs that he mentions in the beginning, he says, I think it's the 14th limb or something like that. Bahugrantha Kalabhyasa Vyakya Vada Vivarjanam. One should give up studying too many books just for defeating others in argument or for maintaining a profession. So, yeah. Jiva Goswami explaining that he says, one should not read too many books means, one should not read too many books which are not in line with the conclusions of Srimad Bhagavatam. So therefore, this may be even Vedic books. So Vedic books not in line with the conclusions of Srimad Bhagavatam also should not be studied. Say for example, if you see, Garga Samhita. So, Garga Samhita has all Vrindavan pastimes.
Yeah.
But still, interestingly, if you see, none of our acharyas have ever quoted from Garga Samhita. Even though, not because it's not a bona fide literature, but the Garga Samhita is presented, has presented Vrindavan pastimes of Krishna, but from the perspective of Gargacharya, whose mood is not Vrindavan mood.
Okay.
So when he observes pastimes in Vrindavan, he presents it he processes it with his intelligence, which has got a lot of Aishwarya. And then that processed understanding he presents, which is not exactly in line with the presentation of Srimad Bhagavatam, the mood of presentation of Srimad Bhagavatam. So even though the pastimes themselves may be accurate, but the perspective presented by Gargacharya may not be in line with the mood of presentation of Srimad Bhagavatam. So therefore, very, very interesting. Our acharyas quote extensively from the Harivamsa Puran and other such books. But interestingly, they never quote from Garga Samhita.
Oh, then the stories which we get like about Kamsas and all these things from Garga Samhita is because of from other sampradayas?
No. Actually,
the voice is breaking. I could not hear.
It is late and published. Can you hear me now?
Bro, I didn't hear any of the answer from last 1 minute. It is means I pushed that idea here.
Because I lost the signal. So now you can hear, na bro?
Ah, yes, bro.
So, yeah, Dhanvir Swami Maharaj had taken the help of Banu Maharaj to translate it, I think. But otherwise, if you see, you know, some of the past times probably is all right. You know, how the, what was the previous life of Kamsa or Agasur or Pakasur that is there. But in terms of quotations, quoting, hardly I have never seen our Acharyas, either Jiva Goswami or Rupa Goswami, quote from Garga Samhita.
Yeah.
From Bhagavatam, they have quoted from Harivamsa Puran, some other, from other Vaishnava Tantras, they have quoted. But interestingly, there is not much quoted from you know, this Garga Samhita.
Yeah.
So, the point is that Brahma Samhita is accepted because its mood and conclusions is in line with the mood and conclusions of Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yeah.
So, that is the point. That is why here he says, Vishwala Deva Goswami says that what persons of pure intelligence realize in the Srimad Bhagavatam and other works is presented in this work. That is why
Brahma Samhita. Like other Puranas also they quote, like Padma Purana or Vishnu Purana or some other literature, but their conclusions are also in not completely in line with Bhagavatam, we can say like that.
Yeah, but some aspects, some stories whose conclusions is in line with Bhagavatam, they quote only that, they don't quote everything.
Yeah.
Because some of the, we discussed this earlier in detail, some of the character portrayals of these personalities in other Puranas is meant for nourishing the faith of people who are Karmanishta or Jnananishta. It is not for nourishing the faith of Bhaktas. So such stories are generally not quoted by our Acharyas. Only those stories of personalities which help nourish the pure devotional faith of the sadhakas, only those stories are quoted.
Yeah.
So, therefore, here he says that Brahma Samhita is important because it is a book which is in line with the conclusions of Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yeah.
What I have explained extensively in Krishna Sandarbha, I have reviewed and I have used some points to explain the Brahma Samhita. So we discussed Nabu. In Krishna Sandarbha, basically it's an elaboration on this verse, Ete Chamsa Kalapamsa Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam.
So
how Krishna is the avatari, he is not an avatara.
Yeah.
So one full book he has dedicated to extract various essence of Srimad Bhagavatam and establish this.
Yeah.
So Srila Jiva Goswami says, thus my heart has become joyful because whatever I am discussing here, I have already discussed in Krishna Sandarbha, and a lot of it I have drawn from there only.
Yeah.
So now this is the introduction. Now we are going to understand word by word what this verse means. So first he is going to explain the word Krishna. What is the meaning of the word Krishna? So he says, the Bhagavatam verse, Ete Chamsha Kala Pumsaha Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam, has established that Krishna is the primary form of Bhagavan.
Yeah.
Right. The same is stated in the first verse of Brahma Samhita with Ishvara Parama Krishna.
Like the to prove Bhagavatam verse, we use Brahma Samhita, and to Brahma Samhita, we are using Bhagavatam.
No, but what that Bhagavatam verse indicates and what this Brahma Samhita verse indicates, he is not just going to quote the Bhagavatam verse and go to the next verse. you will see that he is going to quote extensively from the Upanishads and the other Puranas to establish this point.
Okay.
Yeah. So he is taking the meaning of the word Krishna. He says the meaning of the word Krishna should be understood through the explanation of the verse Ete Chamsa Kala Pumsa Krishnastha Bhagavan Swayam from Bhagavata. The word Krishna denotes a specific form of the Lord whose name is Krishna. Right?
Yeah.
So, otherwise he could have told Ishvara Parama Bhagavan Sachidananda Vigraha.
Yeah.
But he uses the word Krishna because it indicates a specific form.
Yeah.
Huh? Whose name is Krishna? So, this same form is denoted by great devotees such as Shukadeva Goswami in verses like the following.
Yeah.
So, this is from the 10th canto, 3rd chapter. He says, Sa Vismayotfulla Vilochano Harim Sutam Vilokya Anakadundurvistada Krishna Avatar Utsava Sambramo Aspreshan Mudad Vijebhyo Ayutam Apluto Gavam. So he says, Harim Sutam Vilokya Anakadundubis Tada. Tada, at that point of time, Anakadundubi Vasudev, Harim Sutam Vilokya, seeing his own son who was non different from Lord Hari, right?
Yeah.
Saha Vismaya Utfulla Vilochanaha. When he saw his son, because he appeared in four-handed form.
Yeah.
Muda Aplutaha. He was filled with great joy. Dvijebhyo Ayutam Gavam Aspreshan. Ayutam is 10,000. He distributed 10,000 cows to the Brahmanas. Vijebhyo. Mentally, he did this. Krishna Avatara Utsava Sambhramo. With a desire to celebrate the festival of Krishna's appearance, he distributed 10,000 cows. Okay. So, here the word Krishna is used. Right?
Yeah.
The same form of the Lord is denoted in the Chandogya Upanishad of the Samaveda. What does Chandogya Upanishad say? Krishnaya Vasudevaya Devaki Nandanaya. Unto Krishna, Vasudev, the son of Devaki.
Okay.
So this is the word Krishna is specifically indicating the form of the Lord whose name is Krishna.
Yeah. Clear.
Right. By placing the word Krishna first in a series of names of the Lord, in this verse from Chandogya Upanishad, the supreme position of Krishna's name is also indicated. So he possesses the word, he places the word Krishna first and then says Vasudevaya Devaki Nandanaya. So he says, by placing the word Krishna first, okay.
Yeah.
The supreme position of that word is indicated.
How it is indicated?
For that, some of these explanations, you will need some understanding of grammar.
Grammar.
So, okay. So otherwise, we accept these as, you know, axioms. You know.
Yeah.
It's indicated. Right? So he says the Chandogya Upanishad verse first says Krishnaya, indicating the supreme position of Krishna's name. Right? Gargamuni indicates the same by mentioning the name of Krishna before the name of Vasudeva in Bhagavatam. You see, he's quoting Gargamuni but not Garga Samhita. He's quoting Bhagavatam, right?
Yeah.
So this is a famous verse. Asan Varnas Trayohyasya Grinato Anuyugam Tanuhu Shuklo Raktas Tatapita Idanim Krishnatam Gataha. He says, Asya, this boy, Shuklo raktastata pita varnastrayo asan. Varnastrayo asan. He appeared in three other colors. What are the three? Shuklo raktastata pita. Shukla is white, rakta is red, pita is yellow. Anuyugam, in different ages. Tanuhu, you know, in these kind of body possessing these colors. Grinantaha, he accepts.
Yeah.
Idanim, now in this age, Krishnataram Gataha, he has taken up a blackish color. Right?
Yeah.
So, then he says, Prag Ayam Vasudevasya Kvachit Jatas Tavatmajaha Vasudeva Iti Shriman Abhijnaha Samprachakshate. Ayam Tava Shriman Atmajaha. This beautiful son of yours, Prag, sometime before, it could mean previous Yuva or previous birth or previous to your identifying him. Prag Kvachit Jataha, sometimes he also appeared, Vasudevasya, as the son of Vasudeva. Abhijnaha, therefore, people who are learned, Vasudeva Iti Samprachakshate, they are addressing as Vasudeva, because he also took birth as the son of Vasudeva. Right.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So he says, he is quoting, Gargamuni indicates the same by mentioning the name of Krishna but before the name of Vasudeva. So he says that,
because he quoted in the verse before his name.
So before only he quoted Krishna, and then he says he is also called as Vasudeva. Like that. The Brahma Samhita begins with Ishvara Parama Krishnaha to indicate at the very beginning of the work that Krishna is the principal form of God.
Yeah.
Okay. So he's using the first verse to establish the supremacy of Krishna, the form of Krishna. How Krishna is the avatari and not an avatara.
Yeah.
So this is similar to filling a pot with milk in the beginning, thus putting the pot to the best use first. Payasa kumbam purayati iti nyaya. Right. So just like if you want to, you know, fill your box, you will you have limited space. Then you will fill it with the most valuable things first.
Yeah.
And then the little lesser and lesser valuable things, you'll fill it later. So
yeah.
If you have only one pot and you have milk and water to take, you will definitely use that pot to fill it with milk and take it.
Yeah.
Because water you can get it anywhere. Why would you waste the pot to carry water which is available elsewhere? So
yeah.
He says, payasa kumbam purayati iti nyaya. So this nyaya says that if you have something valuable, you will fill the pot first with that. And then after you consume it, you can actually fill it with water like that. So therefore,
he is taking the name of Krishna first.
So he says that the Brahma Samhita begins with Ishvara Parama Krishna to indicate at the very beginning of the work that Krishna is the principal form of God. Like that.
Yes, sir.
That Krishna's name is the chief name of the Lord is also stated by the Lord in the Prabhasa Kanda of the Padma Puran in the conversation between Narada and Kushadvaja. So this is, he is going to quote a verse from the Padma Purana. And this is going to be a conversation between Narada Muni and Kushadvaja. So So through this verse, he's going to establish how Krishna's name is the chief name. So, what does he say? Namnam mukhyatamam nama krishnakyam ne parantapa. So, Narada Muni says, O parantapa, O conqueror of all enemies, Kushadvaja, make Krishnakyam Nama. oh, this is actually Krishna only speaking, and this is quoted by Narada Muni to Kushadvaja in Padma Puran Prabhasakanda. He says, Krishna only says, Me Krishnakyam Nama Namna Mukhyatamam. My name Krishna is the chief amongst all the names, he says.
Okay.
Similarly, in the 108 names of the Lord mentioned in the Brahmanda Purana, it is said. So, the Brahmanda Purana has 108 names of the Lord, in which, again, another proof for the name Krishna to be the chief name. Right? So, he says, Sahasranam nam punyanam tridhavrityatu yat phalam ekavrityatu krishnasya namekam tat prayachati. Very straightforward verse. Sahasranam nam punyanam tridhavrityatu yat phalam. That result which can be attained by chanting the Vishnu Sahasranam three times, 1,000 names of Lord Vishnu three times. Ekavrityatu Krishnasya nama ekam tat prayachati. That result can be attained by chanting the name of Krishna once. So, three sahasranam nam punyanam triravrityatu yatphalam. So, if you chant Vishnu Sahasranam 1,000 names three times, which means 3,000 names, is equivalent to just chanting one name of Krishna.
How, what to understand if they are saying this is superior to this? What it is superior in terms of power or in terms of, like, I chant Narayana Govinda, so, and I chant Krishna. So what makes it, means there is something, what type of potency that we can comprehend, which we can say it is superior?
That is not exactly indicated here. What kind of potency means, maybe it could be the, you are aspiring for some goal, let's say Krishna Prema. So if you chant one name of Krishna, it is as good as chanting the 1,000 names of Lord Narayana three times. It could be time, it could be the amount of result. Yeah, it could be any. It, probably, it is. It is. It is indicating time.
There is like spiritual benefit potency. Like one realization is there that before coming to Krishna consciousness, I was every day reciting Vishnu Sahasranama, and I was with my old habits and all, but as soon as I started chanting, I could give up them because I was knowing something I am not supposed to do, and these things are there, but I could not do it until I started chanting. Even though I was chanting Vishnu Sahasranama daily two times, morning, evening, but I could not overcome certain things. So
That could be attributed to that. That could be attributed to that. Yeah, probably. Probably it could be attributed to the association also. Either way, yes. Being mentioned to inspire our attraction to Krishna. These verses may be understood in a slightly different way by other sampradayas that we should understand.
This is from where, bro? Where we quote?
This is Brahmanda Purana.
Okay.
Yeah. So, this is Brahmanda Purana. So, like if you see, even Prabhupada, when he is quoting Smartavya Saradam Vishnu Vismartavya Na Jata Chit Sarve Vidhi Nishedhya Sur Etayo Revatankara. So, Prabhupada quotes So in that explanation of that verse in the name of Vishnu or Krishna is non-different. So the verse itself says Vishnu, and Prabhupada says that Vishnu and Krishna are non-different. And the elsewhere where directly Krishna is mentioned, Prabhupada clearly says, see, the word Krishna is used. So that is the primary form, like that. So similarly, even though they may say Krishna, so when they read the Brahmanda Puran verse, they might give a different explanation. Wonderful, this is the glories of Krishna. But they will not use that verse to compare the form of Krishna with the form of Narayana. That inspiration and that revelation they will not get, actually.
They say same person only.
Yeah, what is the difference? Yeah, correct. In one sense, yes, there is no difference between Lord Narayana and Krishna, right? Siddhantastu abhedepi Shri Krishna Swarupayoho Rasena Utkrishyate Krishna Rupam Esha Rasasthiti. Srila Rupa Goswami says, when you consider Siddhanta, there is no difference between Shrisha and Krishna. Shrisha Krishna Swarupayo, Lord Narayana and Lord Krishna, there is no difference. Power-wise, they are same. But Rasena Utkrishyate Krishna Rupam. But when you consider Rasa, the sweetness, then Krishna Rupa is very, very significantly more better than the form of Lord Narayana, like that. So he says this statement of the Brahmanda Puran that 3000 names of Vishnu are equal to one name of Krishna also applies to the name Govinda mentioned later in the Brahma Samhita as Anadir Adir Govinda and Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajam. So therefore, he says that Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachidananda Vigraha. But then in this Brahma Samhita, throughout in Brahmaji's prayers, he says Govinda Madhi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Govinda Madhi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. So here he is clarifying Jiva Goswami that Krishna equals Govinda. And Govinda equals the form in Vraja. So this is the argument that he is bringing in. Even though the person indicated by the word Govinda is Krishna, the word Govinda is used to indicate a special quality of herding the cows. So Govinda, yes, is Krishna. Govinda is Narayana. But Govinda specially indicates his special quality of herding the cows. The other words in the verse, starting with the word Ishvaraha, describe the unique nature of Krishna using the conventional meaning of the word Krishna, denoted above as the son of Nanda. So, there are any word has two types of meanings. The conventional meaning and the etymological meaning. So etymological meaning means if understanding the meaning of the word based on its word roots. So Krishna comes from two word roots, Krish and Na. So what is the meaning of Krish? What is the meaning of Na? And when you combine, what does it indicate? So that is the etymological meaning of the word Krishna. And conventional meaning is the son of Vasudeva. The son of Nanda Maharaj. So the conventional meaning is son of Nanda. Why you are taking this explanation? Because the word Govinda is also used. So because the word Govinda is also used, the one who is the cowherd boy, Krishna, that is Krishna, the son of Nanda Maharaj. So that is the conventional meaning of the word Krishna. And the etymological meaning also we will discuss now. So the same uniqueness of Krishna, the son of Nanda, is stated by Garga.
Yeah.
Again, he is not going to quote from Garga Samhita, he is going to quote from Bhagavatam. He is quoting the same two verses. Asan Varnas Trayohyasya Dranato Anuyugam Tanuhu Shuklo Rakastata Pita Idanim Krishnatam Tadaha. This boy has three colors. So yeah. You see, he does not say that the Lord has four colors, of which black is one. Oh. So when you say this boy has three colors, which means this boy must be the avatari.
Yeah.
That's what he says. This boy, Krishna, has three colors, three other colors. Shuklo raktas tata pita. White, red and yellow. Anuyugam tanuhu granatah. When he appears, when he accepts bodies in the other yugas. Idanim, in this yuga, Krishnatam gatah. He has appeared in his transcendental blackish color. Pragayam vasudevasya kvachit jatas tavatmanjah. Vasudeva iti shriman abhijnyaha samprachakshate. So, ayam tava shriman atmajah. This beautiful son of yours, Prag Kochit Jataha, sometimes he appeared previously, Vasudeva says, the son of Vasudeva. Therefore, learned people sometimes call him Vasudeva Iti Samprachakshate. They call this child as Vasudeva.
Yeah.
Here then is the meaning of these two verses. What is the meaning? In every yuga, the body of the person known as Krishna, accepting various avatara forms, appears with colors white, red and yellow. Okay. So, okay. Krishna possessing black form is the avatari, and he appeared in other avataras possessing white, red, and yellow forms.
Yeah.
This is the meaning. These avataras with white, red, and yellow color have now directly appeared within Krishna as his limbs. Now that Krishna is descended on earth. That is the meaning of Idanim Krishnatam Gataha. You see?
Yeah.
Shuklo raktas tata pitaha idanim, now Krishnatam gataha. One meaning of Krishnatam gataha is they have descended into his blackish body.
Yeah.
So when the avatari descends, the avataras also descend along with him. So when Krishna appears, the Shuklo Raktas Tata Pita also idanim, now that Krishna is appearing, now the avatar is appearing, idanim, now Krishna Dam Gataha, they have descended into the blackish body of Krishna.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is another explanation given by Srila Jiva Goswami.
Yeah.
So, therefore, the other three avatars have descended along with Krishna, along with Krishna's form. Right?
Yeah.
Thus, Krishna is the principal name and form, since he is indicated as the cause of all other forms and as the most attractive amongst all the forms. Right? The verb Krish can mean to hold power over others or to attract others. Okay? Most attractive. Sarva Akarshayati Iti Krishna. So, the word Krish also is the root of Akarshan, attract. So therefore, Krishna means one who is all attractive, as Prabhupada always says. Right?
Yeah.
Thus all other forms belong to him because he attracts all other forms. So, like a magnet, when a magnet moves, all iron filings also move, right? Because a magnet is very attractive. So, here, Krishna is like the magnet. And other avatars are like iron filings. So, when Krishna moves, or when Krishna descends, along with him, all the other avatars also descend.
Yeah.
Like that. Therefore, prominence is given to Krishna's name because that name denotes the person who is the most prominent because of his specific qualities. Right? So, yeah. Krishna is most prominent because of his specific qualities.
So in these two verses, Jiva Goswami want to establish how all other avatars are actually coming from part of their form of part of Krishna.
Krishna is the avatari and the others are just avatars in order to establish this point. So Krishna is most prominent because of his specific qualities. 64 qualities as against the 60 qualities possessed by the other forms. And even that, if you see, those 60 qualities are purna, complete in all other forms.
Yeah.
But those 60 qualities in Krishna are purna tama.
Yeah.
Say, for example, hatari gati dayakatvam. So, this is one of the 60 qualities which is present in Lord Narayana, Lord Matsya Kurma, Varaha, Narasimha, Ityadi forms. Hatari gati dayakatvam. So, hatari gati dayakatvam means whomever these forms of the Lord they kill, they attain a destination which is higher than what they deserve. When they kill demons deserve to go to hell. But when the forms of the Lord they kill, they get a destination which is higher than what they deserve. But when Krishna kills, they don't just get a higher destination, they get liberation.
So Sayujya Mukti is only when Krishna kills the demons.
Yeah. When Krishna kills, it is at least Sayujya for every demon. But when the other incarnations kill, liberation is not guaranteed, but a higher destination is guaranteed.
Okay. They may go to heaven or somewhere in between.
Yeah. Something higher than what they deserve. Hatari gati dayakatva.
Okay.
Hatari, if they kill a demon, gati dayakatva, they give a favorable gati to them.
Okay.
Which is more than what they deserve. But it is not mentioned hatari mukti dayakatva.
Okay.
That mukti gati is an exclusive thing of Krishna. That is why this is called as Vastu Vishesh.
Yeah.
Vastu Vishesh means a special characteristic of the object. So that is Krishna.
Right? Yeah.
So even though the 60 qualities are there in Purna Rupa, in all the other incarnations, it is in Purna Tama in Krishna.
Yeah.
So therefore, like that. So now, let us see the etymological meaning of the word Krishna.
Okay. Yeah.
The conventional meaning of Krishna as the son of Nanda, having supreme qualities, coincides with the etymological meaning of the word. We saw that two meanings, you know, etymological and conventional. The conventional meaning is that he is the son of Nanda Maharaj. The son of Nanda Maharaj having supreme qualities.
So at first, Jiva Goswami proved that he is son of Krishna by conventional meaning, and then he proved that this son of Krishna, son of Nanda, who he, when he is explaining, Gargamuni explained that all other incarnations also came through him. In that way, he established his superiority, that even the son of Krishna, so it is superiority.
So through the conventional meaning, he established, if you take the conventional meaning of Krishna, Gargamuni very clearly says that Krishna, who is the son of Nanda Maharaj, is the possessor of all supreme qualities and Sarvakarana Karanam.
Yes.
Now, he says, what is the etymological meaning of Krishna? Yes. So, Jiva Goswami, before even explaining that, tells that actually the etymological meaning also coincides with the conventional meaning. So, what is the etymological meaning? He says, Krishir Bhuvachaka Shabdo Nascha Nirvritira Nirvriti Vachakaha Tayor Aikyam Param Brahma Krishna Yetyabhidiyate. Krishir Bhu Vachaka Shabdo. Krish means existence. Na cha Nirvriti Vachaka. Nirvriti means bliss. Yanirvritis Tanubritas Tavapada Patma Yanat Bhavajanakatash Shravanena Vasya. Dhruva Maharaj says. Nirvriti is bliss. Krishir Bhuvachaka Shabdo Nascha Nirvriti Vachaka. Krish means existence. Na means bliss. Tayor Aikyam. When these two join together, Krish and Na join together, the two roots indicate that Krishna is the supreme form of God. Param Brahma Krishna iti abhidiyate. So, complete bliss exists in this person. Krish
or
Bhuvachaka and
complete bliss of
Nirvriti Vachaka.
Complete bliss of existence also he is.
Yeah. So, the two roots, when Krish and Na, when they join together, these two roots, when they coexist in one person, he has to be the supreme form of God. That form has to be the supreme form. This is from Tayor Aikyam Param Brahma Krishna Iti Abhidiyate. When these two verses come together, at the combination of these two roots indicate that personality is Param Brahma, supreme form of God.
Yeah.
So he says this probably is from some I think Shabdakosha some dictionaries I think.
Yeah.
He next verse, similar verse he quotes from the Gautamiya Tantra, which is a Vaishnava Tantra. He says, this verse cannot refer to another person, for in dealing with worship of Krishna and discussion of the 18th syllable mantra, a similar verse is seen in the Gautamiya Tantra.
Yeah.
So he said, okay, Krishna could mean a generic description of any form of the Lord. It need not necessarily refer to Krishna himself, someone may say. So he says that similar verse is there in the Gautamiya Tantra, where he describes the context also.
Yeah.
Okay. What is the context of this verse? He says the context of this verse is worship of Krishna and the discussion of the 18-syllable mantra in relationship with worship of Krishna. So that is the context in which this verse is quoted. He says,
"Twelve mantras claim Krishna I go in there."
Probably, yeah. The claim Gopal mantra, right?
This is Gopal mantra.
The sixth of the Gayatri, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So he says, "Krishi shabdascha sattarto nascha ananda swarupakah sukarupo bhaved atma bhavananda mayat mayat pataka mayat pataka." He says, "Kri means existence. Krishi shabdascha sattarto. Satta means existence. Na nascha ananda swarupakah. Na means having a form of bliss. So Krishna means who eternally has a form of bliss.
Yeah.
So Krishna means existence. Na means having a form of bliss. Sukha rupo bhavet atma. He is the very form of happiness. Why? Because bhavananda mayatvatma. Because he is composed of the bliss arising from prema. Right? So so he is quoting this verse from Gautamiya Tantra to establish this point that
Krishna, etymological meaning Krishna.
Krishna, the etymological meaning indicates Param Brahma.
Yeah.
Like that. So considering
this verse is very so convincing, means even very easy to to quote, because it is from the tantras. It is not like like Brahma Samhita.
Not from Brahma Samhita. Yeah. But it's okay. But still, you cannot convince the other sampradaya people, and they should not be convinced ideally.
Yeah.
This is for our own. Because if they get Krishna will not allow them to get convinced by this, because then they will have to it is against their inclination of worshipping a form which attracts lot of Aishwarya. So they will see an alternative meaning to this particular verse.
And they may not count this as a primary verse.
They will not call this may not call this as you can say like Paribhasha Sutra or something. So considering the statements of these two verses, the meaning is as follows. He says, the meaning of the root bhu in the phrase Krishir Bhuvachaka Shabdo is that entity by whose power all objects exist. Okay. So Krish means that entity by whose power all objects exist. That is sattato krishi bhuvachaka shabdo. The word krish means existence. Existence here means that by whose power all objects exist.
Okay.
This is equivalent to the word bhava, meaning great power, which is inherent only in the Lord. You see, he is quoting from this Gautamiya Tantra verse. Bhava ananda mayatvataha. So, bhava is power. Ananda is bliss. So then he says, because of this meaning of Krish, when we say Karshati, derived from the root Krish, to overpower, it means he controls all in reference to Krishna. So therefore, it means controller of all.
Okay. He is the object of all existence and then control them.
Nay, when you say that by his power all objects exist, what does it mean? Which means he is controlling everyone.
Yeah.
That is the meaning. Thus, the two words Bhu and Krish are said to have the same meaning.
Okay.
Krishi Bhuvachaka Shabdo. Therefore, he says Krish equals Bhu. Bhu means to
maintain.
To maintain, right? Bhu. So maintain. Right? Or control. In the second verse from Gautamiya Tantra, Krish is said to indicate Satta or existence. Krishi Shabdasta Sattartho. That is because existence is another meaning of the root Bhu, to exist. Okay.
Yeah.
So therefore he says Krish equals Bhu equals Satta. Meaning to exist, not to exist.
Yeah,
he who causes other living entities to exist or maintain or control. Because if you say Krish means exist, so which means this is true with, then the Krish Shabda can be used to indicate all living entities, because all living entities exist.
Yeah.
Antavanta ime deha nityasyukta sharirina.
Yeah.
So every living entity eternally exists. So if you take Krish means to exist, means he himself exists, then what is the big deal? Existence, the root, the meaning of the root to exist does not mean he himself exists, but he causes the existence of all other entities. That is the meaning of the word Krish.
Yeah.
Now, if we want to define a part, we should infer one element, the part, as a cause, and the other element, the descriptive term, as the effect, by establishing a relationship of part of cause and effect. Okay, so like we say, a pot holds water, or a pot looks round in shape. So first, the that which you are describing, that should come first, and the description has to come later.
Yeah.
Right? In any statement.
Yeah.
So if I say Radha Pramod Prabhu is a very artistic person, so I won't say like artistic person is Radha Pramod. Right?
Yeah.
So I'll say Radha Pramod Prabhu is an artistic person. So the person whom you want to describe, that person's name should come first and the description should come later. That is the proper usage, right?
But you tell the known thing and then unknown thing. That's why.
Correct. So he says, when we define a part, we assume that it exists.
Yeah.
Right? So otherwise, why would you describe a non-existing substance? Right?
Yeah.
So, when we define a part, we assume that it exists. And thus, describing that the part exists, part means the existence of part, does not tell us anything unique about the part. Right?
Yeah.
So let me tell you something about the part. The part exists. So now, what additional information have you given about the part?
Yeah. Right?
When you say that now I will describe the part, that itself means that the part exists. Because why would you describe a non-existent thing?
Yeah.
Right? So therefore, if you say that the word Krish means to Krish indicates existence, so therefore the word Krishna indicates that he exists. I mean, what is the big deal? The living entities also exist, the pot also exists, the building also exists, the chariot exists, everything exists.
Yeah. So
therefore, Krish cannot mean that he exists, whereas Krish means that because of him, the whole world exists.
Yeah.
So he says,
I think they're expert in describing something that does not exist.
Mayavadis, right? Yeah, that is why they have to twist and turn so much, actually. He says, we cannot assume it means existence of some other object like cloth.
Yeah.
Pot means the existence of cloth. You cannot say like that. Nor should we assume that it simply means existence. Pot is existence, as both would be meaningless as definitions. How would you define a pot? A pot exists. Is that a definition of pot?
Yeah.
So, see, in the same way, the use of the word Krish in describing Krishna should not mean merely existence, but the cause of existence of everything. So therefore, Krish cannot mean just existence.
Yeah.
Right. It should mean cause of all existence. That's what he's indicating here.
Yeah.
This should also be the sense of the word akarsham, the noun derived from the root krish. It should mean the power of controlling everything in all existence rather than the literal meaning attraction. Okay. So therefore, Krish cannot just mean just attraction, but it should mean power of controlling everything.
Yeah.
Right. Therefore, for defining Krishna, when it is said that Krish means existence, taking that meaning literally is meaningless.
Yeah.
So therefore, here it means he causes every existence, or he controls every living entity. That should be the meaning. So therefore, another more specific meaning of existence must be inferred.
Yeah.
So this is about the explanation of the root Krish. So right now we are discussing the etymological meaning of Krishna. So in that we have been discussing about the Krish Dhatu, what it exactly should indicate. Now let's move to the Na Dhatu. Na stands for Nirvritti, which means bliss.
Yeah.
The combination of the two words, Krish and Na, Tayor Aikyam, the Lord as the basis of all things and the cause of bliss to all, indicates Param Brahma by identification of the case Samana Adhikaranaya in the sentence. So this is grammar.
Grammar. Right.
So he says, in Krishna, Krish should mean basis of all things, and Na should mean cause of bliss to all.
Yeah.
Like that. Brahman means that object, Brihanam Vastu, which is the outstanding nourisher among all things. So, Brihanam Vastu. Okay. Why is he talking about this Brihanam Vastu? Tayor Aikyam Param Brahma. So, Param Brahma. So, in that Brahma means Brihanam Vastu. Brihanam means nourisher. Okay. Param Brahma means a supreme nourisher. Outstanding nourisher of all things. And yeah. Param Brahma means the greatest among all nourishers, or he who is greater than all the nourishers. Tayor Aikyam Param Brahma. So how does she nourish everyone? By becoming the basis of all things and the cause of bliss of all things.
Yeah.
Because the appetite to live should also be there. The ability to live, the physical ability to live may be there, but the desire to live should also be there.
Yeah.
The desire to live comes from the bliss.
Yeah.
So therefore, a person should feel nourished in order to get the desire to live. So therefore, Param Brahma means he is the greatest of all nourishers, who becomes the basis of all things and also the cause of bliss of all.
Yeah.
Therefore, krishi bhuvachaka shabdo nascha nirvritti vachaka tayor aikyam param brahma krishna iti abhidiyate.
Yeah.
Like that it is indicated. That param brahman or greatest nourisher is called Krishna. Tayor aikyam param brahma krishna iti abhidiyate. Okay.
Yeah.
So, I think, okay. So, if one takes the word Krish to mean simply attraction and combines that meaning with the word Na, meaning simply bliss, a relation of cause and effect between the object being described and the two modifying words cannot be established, since Krishna would, if you when they are joined together, would mean attraction and bliss simply equal each other.
Yeah.
So if you if you take the simple
meaning
of the word Krishna, it would mean
attraction and bliss.
Attraction and bliss. They are synonymous.
Yeah.
Right? So therefore, it would make no sense.
Yeah.
Okay. So therefore, Krishna should mean he is the greatest amongst all nourishers by giving them the source of existence and being the
desire,
cause of bliss.
Yeah, cause of bliss.
Right? So this is the, this should be the understanding. Yeah. Etymological meaning. So Krishna, the greatest object is attraction and bliss.
Yeah.
This is similar to saying ghee is life. Okay. What we really mean by that statement is that ghee causes long life. Similarly, when we say Krishna is attraction, we mean that Krishna having power over all things causes attraction or is attractive to all things.
Yeah. Okay.
So Krishna is attraction means Krishna having power over all things is attractive to all. That's what it means. This is similar to ghee is like that. And the meanings of Brahman just given are supported by the Vishnu Puran, which gives the following derivation of the word Brahman. Right? So Brahman we saw Brahanam.
Yeah.
Vastu. So
existence.
Okay. Right? Maintenance. Nourisher. Yeah, nourisher.
Yeah.
Nourisher.
Yeah.
Right. So he is quoting the Vishnu Puran verse as proof of meaning of Brahman as nourisher.
Yeah.
He is quoting this verse for that. Bruhatvat Brahmanatvat cha tad Brahma paramam viduhu. Brahman is known as the supreme entity. Brahma paramam viduhu. Why? Tad Bruhatvat. Huh? The suffix vad means because of. Bruhatvat means because of being bruhat. Because of being great. Brahmanatvat. Brahmana means to full or to nourish completely. Okay.
Yeah.
Brahmanatvat. And because it is the nourisher of all things. Okay. So the Brh Dhatu has two meanings from which Brahman comes from the Brh Dhatu. Right. Brh has two meanings. Brhat and Brahmana.
Okay,
Brahat means great and Brahmana means nourish.
Okay, yeah.
So therefore Brahman would mean greatest nourisher. Okay, like that. So, how can this be said? He says, Vishnu Purana is referring to the Shruti statements. The Shruti states that Brahman is that which is great and produces greatness.
Yeah.
Right? Another definition in the Brihad Gautamiya Tantra also describes Krishna as Brahman. Right?
Yeah.
So, he says,
Krishish. Okay, so in the previous statement, he is proving Krishna how he is Brahman, means how he is the maintainer. So this is what is means in that shloka of the tantra. We hear that Krishna and a definition of Krishna and that Brahman is also given. So then it is saying that is the greatest nourisher.
Yeah, correct. So it meant, even though the verse, the Brahma Samhita verse itself does not have the word Brahman there, but he said, Tayor Aikyam Param Brahma Krishna Iti Abhidiyate, it is mentioned.
Yeah.
So therefore, because he is addressed as Param Brahma, so he is explaining the meaning of the word Brahman. So what is the meaning of Param Brahman? So you can call Krishna as Param Brahman. So, do you really understand the meaning of Brahman?
Brahman.
Do you know what is Brahman? He says, Brahman means the greatest nourisher.
Yeah.
So, he says, that is why he is explaining the meaning of the word Brahman here.
Yeah.
So, another definition in Brihad Gautamiya Tantra also describes Krishna as Brahman. Okay. He says, कृषि शब्दस्य सत्तार्थो नश्च आनंद स्वरूपकः सत्ता स्वानंदयोर योगात् चित परम ब्रह्म च उच्यते. अनदर प्रूफ फॉर कृष्णा बीइंग ब्रह्मन, कृष्णा बीइंग डिस्क्राइब्ड एज ब्रह्मन. ओके, सो ही सेज कृषि शब्दस्य सत्तार्थो, द वर्ड कृष मीन्स एक्जिस्टेंस, नश्च आनंद स्वरूपकः, न मीन्स हैविंग अ फॉर्म ऑफ ब्लिस, सत्ता स्वानंदयोर योगात, बिकॉज कृष्णा इज द कॉज ऑफ एक्जिस्टेंस एंड दस द कॉज ऑफ ब्लिस फॉर ऑल बीइंग्स.
इस फर्स्ट टू लाइन सेम इन द प्रीवियस आल्सो.
या या करेक्ट, ही इज कॉल्ड द सुप्रीम ब्रह्मन विथ कॉन्शियसनेस. चित परम ब्रह्म च उच्यते. सो दिस इज अनदर प्रूफ ही गिव्स फॉर कृष्णा बीइंग डिस्क्राइब्ड एज ब्रह्मन.
So,
So he says, though the monists consider existence and bliss to be names with the same meaning to designate one Brahman, right? Since Brahman has no qualities, the grammarians have acknowledged that the words existence and bliss have different meanings. So you cannot say that sat and ananda
mean
the same thing. The word sat means the supreme cause of all things in existence. Why? So sat means supreme cause of all things in existence.
Okay. It is not just existence. It is supreme cause.
Not just existence.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So now the question is, what is the proof?
Yeah.
So he quotes from Chandogya Upanishad. This is proved by the statement Sadeva Saumyam Idam Agra Asit. Just similar to Aham Eva Sameva Agre Nanyadyatsa Satram. Like that. He says Sadeva Saumyam Idam Agra Asit. What is called Sat existed before everything.
Yeah.
Right? So what is called Sat means Idam Agra Asid means existed. If you say Sat also means existence, so the meaning would be existence existed before everything. Right?
Yeah.
So that cannot make any meaning. Right? That cannot have any meaning. So therefore, also if the two words Satta and Ananda had the same meaning, then one of the words would be redundant.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So then how would he say Satta Swanandayor Yogat? Right? So Yogat means by a combination. So if Satta and Ananda means the same thing, then by the by the combination of Ananda and Ananda, you know, that makes no meaning.
Right?
It makes redundant. So if Satta and Ananda mean the same, there is the problem of redundance.
Yeah.
Right? It would be like describing an object by repeating two words with the same meaning. Like defining a Kadamba Vriksha as Vriksha and Taru.
Yeah.
Right. Kadamba Vriksha Taru.
Yeah.
You know, what do you mean Kadamba Vriksha Taru? Like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu part, right? Bhavani Bharta. So what is this Bhavani Bharta? Bhavani already means the wife of Shiva. So you are telling that he is the husband of the wife of Shiva. And what is the meaning of husband of the wife of Shiva? Directly to Shiva, no? So here Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, how can you use Bhavani Bharta? A prayog sahi nahi hai. You know, this is like a redundant usage, like that. In addition, that definition does not produce a relationship of an object being defined as its descriptive modifier, right?
Yeah.
So it simply says Brahman is Brahman. If you say Sat means Brahman, then it just says Brahman is Brahman. Therefore, arguing that the syllable Krish and Na, which indicate existence and bliss, simply indicate the supreme Brahman is defeated.
Yeah.
Therefore, Krish, Na cannot mean just existence and bliss. Right? Hence, proof. Like that. So, I think, Prabhu, we have discussed we have not discussed many slides, but then of course 34 slides we have discussed, but it was lot of, you can say, technical stuff. So I think we will take some time to digest it and then continue this discussion tomorrow. So, Prabhu, tomorrow is Saturday. Morning, Prabhu, 5:30 to today. Also, morning 6:30 to 8:15. I had class almost 8:30. It went on till 8:30.
What class you're taking?
Hyderabad Madhuri Kadambini Group.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Amal Mahaprabhu is group.
Oh, okay.
So, every Friday morning 6:45 it starts and it goes on till 8:15, 8:30 it goes on.
Same ID.
No, I can send you the ID for that. It's a different ID.
Okay.
I can send you. And on Saturday morning, 5:30 to almost like 5:30 to 6:30, 6:45 for the US devotees, Madhuri Kadambini goes. So, that will be too early for you.
Yeah.
It's their time. And tomorrow, 10:30 to 12:30, Goa class is also there too. Chaitanya Shikshamrit. Last week, I think you missed it out.
Huh? I'll attend that Chaitanya Shikshamrit.
So I think tomorrow we will drop out Brahma Samhita because it will become too much. Then after that, I have.
It is not for me, not a problem. At least we can do half an hour, 45 minutes also.
Okay. So we will do at least half an hour, 45 minutes then.
Yeah,
at least 1 hour we'll do. So 10:30 to 30, if we do Chaitanya Shikshamrit, then maybe 2 to 3 we could do Brahma Samhita.
Yeah.
Then I have one discussion with Premvaran Prabhu also. And then I have Kargar Bhakti Rasamrita to do also in the evening.
Oh.
So tomorrow is little packed, but still we could do 1 hour at least, so that we don't lose the continuity. So
yeah.
Tomorrow we will do 1 hour Brahma Samhita. We will do.
Yeah. If I go to studio, I may go in the morning. Then I will by there in the afternoon. I'll be present.
Yes. Okay, bro.
Oh, no, tomorrow studio is not there. Tomorrow Saturday I cannot go. So I'll be there morning 10:30 to 12:30.
10:30 to 12:30, and then tentatively we will do it either 2 to 3 or 3 to 4. We will, based on mutual convenience, we will decide tomorrow.
Yes, yes.
Hmm? Okay, bro. Thank you. Okay, bro. And that's enough. Message.